Jamie Marty, also in the studio. Good morning.
So you get something to hold.
Exactly.
Let me hold something.
You right, but she's not that sentimental. It's got to be of high value.
Oh, let me hold something of high value.
Right, exactly. Her emotions aren't cheap. Her emotions don't come cheap. So as long as she doesn't mind being left.
This reminds me of the celeb, was it Shoza? She said that she was worth 500,000 rand. So you have to come at her at her net worth. So,
so you don't get through the door.
If you don't appreciate her net worth and what that entails in terms of upkeep, then don't bother sliding into her DMs.
Right, exactly. So there we go, Zanati. I think it's a good policy.
Exactly. It really
You want to leave me? That's fine. Just leave me with something. It's apparently simplicity day. Well, there we go. Zanati's got it down to a very, very simple strategy. And it's new conversations day. We were talking about this a little bit earlier, and I find it fascinating. Because as much as we all love to converse and as much as we all love to talk, the truth is, or the reality is, I think, is that we very rarely have new conversations. We tend to have our own. You know, we all work in patterns and rhythms within our own family, within a friend group, within our work environment. Conversations have in pattern, come in patterns and waves. And we very, very rarely step out of that to have a conversation that is somewhat different. So I'd love your thoughts on that. 34519 or 061-895-1019. Marty Jamie joining us, as you heard, in the studio. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. I'm good.
Excellent. So we thought we'd get you in to help us try and unpack what on earth is going on in Parliament. Yesterday we had that Pravin Gordhan EFF standoff. We've had the public protector who I'm deeply skeptical of. I was supportive in the beginning. I thought she needed to be given a chance, but she seems to be fixated on one issue only. Are we being unfair? Is it the press that is portraying her this way? And are we just lapping that up and accepting that which we are being told to do? Your thoughts?
So I think the first impression the public protector gave was one that alarmed many people who were almost of the view that the Zuma regime is a bad regime. And probably that's a fair assessment of the Zuma, presidency.
Right.
So remember when she came in, she was like, let's watch ANN7. Let's not, watch ENCA. And people viewed that as being, an allegiance, instruction or like something symbolic to everyone in the office that look, there's a new sheriff
in town.
Like a
shout out to that regime.
Exactly, exactly. So I think that already cast, a shadow of doubt in many people's minds. And when she did that APSA case, she made an instruction in the case, and basically she tried to instruct Parliament to modify the Constitution. And modifying the Constitution is something that she is not empowered to instruct, because basically only members of Parliament
can. It was ultra vires. I mean, she stepped out of her power.
Exactly.
It was above her, or not even above. It was actually just separate to her jurisdiction.
Yeah, exactly. Because her jurisdiction is to review impropriety within organs of states, to recommend the remedial actions. They're binding, but that's her purview. So to actually then try to instruct Parliament on what to do within their exclusive mandate was something that was definitely out of the realm and showed, I think, to many people, misunderstanding of the law and her powers. And that was a fair review, especially on that particular instruction.
Okay.
And the courts upheld that. And I think that already set in place, let's say, a narrative around her competence, around her political fealty.
Right, because unfortunately the conclusion was either she was incompetent because she should have known that, or she's loyal to a cause outside of her office.
Exactly. But I think in all of that, we then have fallen into a little bit of a gray zone, because we have preferences as the public. We prefer Cyril Ramaphosa and his team. We have a view on Pravin as being the fighter of corruption, as being one of the people who stood up to Zuma.
Right.
And I think that's affecting our assessment of the game, of governance, because we are now from the benches, you know, ignoring referee calls. And sometimes referees are biased. Sometimes they lean a particular way. Sometimes they have a style we don't like. Some referees are one way or another. So now, rather than assessing whether or not Praveen and Cyril are offside, we are now co-refereeing and actually calling into question the status of referees in the sport. And this is where, as a public, we are now falling into, I think, a very dangerous area for constitutionalism.
I agree with you, because I know that when I read a comment about the Praveen and about Ramaphosa, all I want to do is kind of ignore that, because I, number one, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Because they are, to me, they are a sign of hope, because we, they are certainly and have proven to have stood up against corruption. So I need to believe in them. It's not because I know them, love them or whatever, but
yeah,
it's my need to know that there is somebody honest, or there are bodies honest that are, that are leading government. And, but the second part of it is that if the referee, if we are doubtful about the referee, then the natural thing to happen is for us to be able to use that cognitively to say, I don't believe her anyway.
Yeah.
And she might be right, but we still don't believe her because she's kind of lost our faith.
Exactly. And I guess this is where, when you are in charge of judicial bodies, it's very important for you to always keep propriety at its heart, because the law must be done, but it must also be seen to be done and to be done without any whiff of impropriety. And this is why judges recluse themselves. This is why we have all of these processes of transparency, accountability, because we don't want ever decisions made by people empowered to make them to be questionable off the bat. And this is what's happening now, because the more we keep saying everything is going on review, everybody's challenging the decisions, everybody's saying, yes, but I'm just going to let a court really weigh in and check whether or not you're correct. What that does is it puts this question mark over the office, and that question mark will continue to exist, because now you've got Musi Maimane saying, hey, public protector, can you actually look into this Bosasa issue and give me a final determination? But at the same time, you've got Musi Maimane saying, ah, to hell with the public protector's findings.
Yeah, on it doesn't work both ways, and that's the problem.
Exactly. That internal conflict that now exists is going to follow this office unless we as the public review our approach. And I think what's important for us to do is maybe to hold back on the shouting match, because we're not actually making things better, right? So, for instance, I saw once one of our respected professors trying to say, well, there's a difference between a lie and an untruthful statement, because...
What?
Yeah, exactly. That was my reaction.
What?
She's like, well, the lie has intent, and the untruthful statement has no intent.
How do we know that?
You can't know intent, because it's in the heart.
Right.
You can know the machinations and calculations of an individual when they make a statement.
Exactly.
So now, you see, a lot of people are avoiding that Praveen told us that he had not met the Guptas.
Right.
And then later on, after many delays.
Yes.
Remember, he didn't want to go to the permission and delayed.
And then ultimately, he kind of acknowledged that, yes, there was a Gupta in the room.
Exactly.
Right. And so it's interesting, because what I did with that statement was I gave him the benefit of the doubt. And I said, well, look, it was in fact, Zanati and I, you and I spoke about it.
Mm-hmm.
We said, okay, that was in 2010. The Guptas weren't what we know of them looking back at from 2019's eyes. So maybe the guy was in the room. He wasn't an active participant.
Mm.
It's possible to forget, but I don't know that either. But yet I've done that.
Yeah.
I've given him the benefit of the doubt.
Exactly.
Why? Because overall I trust this guy.
Exactly. And I think we're doing for him what he wants us to do for other people, but only we're charitable to him, because he's like, connect the dots, you know, connect the dots, do the math. And then when it comes to him, we must connect the dots only in a favorable way. And I think the challenge is we've created a narrative of the good guys versus the bad guys in the ANC. And we are ignoring the good guy's conduct, because ultimately we believe it's in our interests. We're like, well, if they did all of this SARS rogue unit stuff or whatever you want to call it, but they were chasing the bad guys. Mm. You know, they were trying to get Mazzotti. They were trying to get all of these, cigarette smugglers and to deal with them. So I guess it's okay, you know, and, if the law doesn't quite allow that, then maybe we should just fix it, you know, and we're ignoring, that if our good guys do some questionable stuff, we should still be able to call it out because ultimately, you know, when the bad guys come around, they're going to say they're doing that stuff, the same questionable conduct, for the same reasons the good guys did. And if we continue to operate in this gray zone, sooner or later, we won't know.
Bottom line is everybody needs to be held accountable.
Exactly.
That's really the answer to the whole thing. The public protector needs to be held accountable.
Absolutely.
Pravin Gordhan needs to be held accountable. So does the president. It's 8:21. I'm chatting to Mighty Jamie. I'd love your thoughts on it on 34519 or 061-895-1019. Let's take a look at what's happening on our highways and Bowers and Nutty. Focus on between Johannesburg and Hazyview, please. Time is 8:30. Jamie, Mighty Jamie in a studio. We're talking about the public protector. We're talking about how to deal with all of the shenanigans that are taking place. What did you think of the EFF yesterday in Parliament not listening or not allowing Pravin Gordhan to speak? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean,
let's do that.
Yeah. So disruption is a strategy of the EFF. I mean, they've basically got their South African filibuster type of version, or at least they know how to create a ruckus and get some media traction. In fact, the most interesting thing about the EFF, if you've noticed, is that they bait the ANC into creating this drama. You know, it works for them every time. So they can have maybe an anodyne speech about whatever, but they'll spice it up with insults and like, a little bit of hyperbole, and then you get a point of order, and then all of a sudden you have this debate about whether it is or it isn't, and then all of that leads to these moments which create entertaining TV or YouTube content or whatever, but also draws in eyeballs, right? But in terms of the disruption, it's a consistent strategy of the EFF. They've said that, in their view, Pravin is a constitutional delinquent, and because of that, and because there is a finding against him, therefore he shouldn't be like allowed to speak or whatever. And I think it's interesting because we must remember the journey that we've been through in terms of the public protector's office. So Thuli Madonsela makes a finding against Jacob Zuma on Gandla, and she makes recommendations. And this word recommendations is, I guess, probably the most ridiculous insertion in the act, because people didn't realize that it would create ambiguity. Remember, Zuma then tells us that, listen, English interpretation, recommendation is merely a suggestion that I ought to consider, and I have a discretion whether to consider it or not. And then everyone disagrees and says that's not what the Public Protector Act and the Constitution envision. We go to the Constitutional Court. The case was the EFF versus the Speaker of the National Assembly. And the Constitutional Court determines that these recommendations or remedial actions, which are actually remedial instructions to rectify a particular problem, are binding and need to be followed upon. The presidency doesn't have discretion. So now that the public protector made a finding and actually said, this finding cannot be ignored whilst you go through a review, which means that it's effective as soon as the clock runs out on it, the 30-day time that she has put in place. That puts Pravin exactly at the same place that Jacob Zuma was, and we embraced, fortunately or unfortunately, the tactics of the EFF to disrupt, because we say, listen, this guy has a finding against him. He shouldn't be here. And this is a justified, form of activism within Parliament. Now it comes back to bite Pravin. Remember, the first tactic he employed was that the first finding against him, which was related to the Ivan Pillay case, was that they said, we're going on review, so everything is suspended. But the second time around, the public protector was like, okay, I see what strategy a lot of politicians are trying to employ now. Is basically, in her view, if you give a charitable interpretation to her office, is that all of these politicians are simply going to say, I'm going to review. Helen Zille says she's going to review. Fikile Mbalula says, I'm going to review. Everybody's like, well, I'm going to review, so what's the problem? You know? And this clogs up the legal system because reviews don't just happen next week. You know? So now what she's done is she's called it all to a head. And if you want to look at it at a political level, but let me just finish the point. So by doing that, now she's avoided that loophole for Praveen and put this all front and center to say, look, there's a finding against you. I believe you did something wrong and this is my job. I'm the referee. I have to make these calls. Now you have to step aside or you have to recluse yourself or something like that. And this is where the conundrum then lies. In fact, probably the best thing to do would have been for him to take some form of a leave while this gets rectified. You know, because there are other people in the office and who can still operate the office. You know, it's not like...
Yeah, he's not the only man in the
He can go away for 60 days. If we're fighting a long fight, if we say the good guys are playing it for the long game, why not have somebody who is trusted on that team to come in as an interim, you know, person whilst his name is cleared?
While he sorts that out.
Exactly. But at a deeper level, it almost looks as if If you buy into the political speculation, and perhaps there's credence to it, it looks like the public protector has a two-step strategy. Number one, she's going to test the chinks in Praveen's armor before she goes for Cyril. So if she can bring Praveen down,
Very interesting.
She's going to be able to bring Cyril down. And it's actually interesting because if you compare this to the strategy that America used in their trade war with China. So the first company that they went for was not Huawei, it was ZTE. Almost as if ZTE was the pilot program of how do you take action.
Of somebody bigger.
Yes. So then they developed the whole methodology on a smaller sample space, you know. We take down ZTE, we ban it, we negotiate favorable deals, and then we unban them. Or whatever. So then Trump does that with ZTE and he succeeds. So now he has the blueprint.
Right.
And then they wait six or 8 months and then they roll out the blueprint.
But isn't that, that strategy is very interesting and probably very, very smart. But again, and the problem with this is, and why it's so difficult to argue this is because if she's meant to perform a function where she's the public protector, then it's not only how she deals with a specific, but it's which ones she's choosing to deal with. And if we zoom out a little bit and we look at the fights that she's looking at taking on, and you look at the fact that, okay, Praveen Gordhan maybe shouldn't have made that agreement about an early retirement, you know, many CEOs will make that kind of decision. Well, should they have, shouldn't they have? All right, you could argue either way. But when we're talking about 21 trillion rand that has been lost through corruption, then is that really what you should be focusing on? Now, if everything else has been is being dealt with, then most definitely it should be something to be focused on. But if not, then isn't she using her resources actually to follow a very specific agenda? How do we deal with that?
I think it's very difficult because we don't have all of the, I guess, metrics for how she picks up cases or and she doesn't. But it's important because that speaks to one of the legal arguments that could be presented here. You see, when you are doing a review, there's certain grounds upon which your review can be granted in terms of to have a successful review. It's broadly around this idea of rationality and reasonableness. And under rationality and reasonableness, if you can show that there's an ulterior motive, that something is being done in bad faith, you can then get your review to be successful because it speaks to, you know, the legal apparatus being used for something other than the face value intention. And this is where some of your argument speaks to and where Praveen is saying, listen, I'm being targeted. There's a political game at play here. The challenge is the nature of this office is that it does look into government, you know, impropriety, and it's going to involve politicians. And I don't think we thought carefully through how do we do this while protecting the credibility of the office, while perhaps even having a good system for how the cases are chosen. You know, because we may say this doesn't matter, but everyone at SARS could say, well, this is to the heart of the institution. Mm-hmm. And the fight in SARS to me is one that I think almost speaks to the nature of the state that we have. You know, I was thinking, what kind of a state is South Africa? You know, cause we know that Mexico is a drug state, it's a narco state. We know that Zimbabwe is a military dictatorship. What kind of a state is South Africa? What kind of nefarious stuff is happening? And maybe this is a tender cartel state, you know, and this is why we're seeing some of the fights happening the way they happen within SARS, because also SARS gets to choose who they go at aggressively and whose, you know, misdemeanors or tax evasion they ignore. And perhaps this is speaking to the heart of the contestation. And maybe we need to review, you know, our tax collecting bodies and our intelligence bodies, you know. But these are difficult conversations to have because they put you they put a target on your back in a very, very direct way. But maybe these are some of the commissions we need to have to say, listen, there seems to be a breakdown in operations in our intelligence community, in our special investigations community, and in our revenue collection community. Let's have a public open discussion where we can restructure these bodies and rebuild the trust. Because ultimately, if these organizations continue to operate in contestation with vendettas, counter agendas, as a public, it's very difficult for us to put a finger on anything. And if we stop believing in the tax man, at some point, this tax revolt idea starts gaining more ground.
And it is already. We're starting to see journalists, Farah Al-Hafiji, for example. I think it was her this week where she's saying, you know, it's stop trying to collect more taxes.
Yeah,
and she's not wrong. She's not wrong. If 21, and that's the figure, yes, a few people have asked me, we were speaking about it earlier, the figure that they are talking about in terms of losses because of corruption is 21 trillion rand. Now, if that is the case, then why should South Africans pay more tax and more tax and more tax? The government needs to get their act together.
True, and I would agree to an extent, you know, because I think we all have an obligation to maintain the social contract because, you know, some stuff works. And, you know, sometimes I feel like we get sucked in the bubble of everything doesn't work and we forget that some of the stuff is working. So if we all opt out, the stuff that does work will stop working. But we do need to stop the leakage, you know, because we've got functional pipes where the money goes into the system and it goes to where it was supposed to go. And even though it's not ideal because of the volume, then we've got all of this money leaking. You know, we've got burst pipes all over the place and this is the corruption. So I would respond to that kind of a narrative rather by saying we definitely need our best plumbers to go in, find those leaks, shut them down and, you know, stop whatever is causing them. And this is where I think the contestation is partly at play. And it's difficult to tell who's the good guy and who's the bad guy when all of them are using the same tactics. And this is where our challenge lies. And this is where I think we definitely need this stuff ventilated in court. And we need the good guys to operate at a higher standard. You know, something funny that Julius Malema said in Parliament was like, listen, just come clean with some of the stuff that has happened. Come clean to Parliament. We don't want these other guys to be in charge. You know, and I think we are all in agreement is that we are happy with the Cyril cabal being in charge of the country. We are happy to have people with some understanding of management, some understanding of process, some understanding of operations accountability. And if we only have 7% of clean audits in the country, we definitely need more MBA types running the country than we just need like political branch types running the country. So if that's our dichotomy right now, the good guys have to realize that we're not necessarily going to get off the, you know, the platform, because they took some dodgy decisions, but they need to bring us into their confidence to
and
say,
just
listen,
be open and be honest.
These are some things we had to do tactically in the short term. And then how do we fix that so it doesn't happen again? You know, if we mess around too much with the code, our laws and our systems, we're going to end up in a situation where we can't put the genie back in the bottle, yeah, so to speak.
Absolutely. In fact, I had a law professor when I was at WITS, and that was in, I did my LLB,
yeah,
in 91 and 92.
Yeah.
And what was interesting there is our constitution hadn't been written yet. But we studied constitutional law, and it was fascinating, and one of the most powerful things that, that one of the, our professors said is, imagine your biggest enemy in power. And then the constitution has got to do the job of protecting that person. So at the time, everybody was euphoric about, yes, Nelson Mandela, and you couldn't say a negative word, and you couldn't, there was nothing that we would imagine could ever be bad.
Yeah.
So anything, you know, we would be relaxed. And in fact, that's exactly the situation now. The fact that we trust Cyril Ramaphosa and we trust Pravin Gordhan doesn't mean that the implementation of the system can be ignored. It cannot be ignored. Otherwise, we're going to land ourselves back in the situation in which we found ourselves. We do have to wrap up. It is 8:45. Mata Jami, thank you for an incredible amount of insight into this very, very complex issue. I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 061-895-1019. Good morning.